So yes, I'm going to kind of propose a new programming model here of tasks with effects for disciplined concurrent programming. I'm Stephen Heumann. This is joint work with my advisor, Vikram Adve. So there are many different uses of concurrency in today's applications. And I think sometimes we tend to focus on parallelism for performance. And obviously, there are lots of different kinds of algorithms within this domain, kind of regular structures and irregular structures. So that's one major category of concurrency. But applications also use concurrency for many different other things. Like a typical interactive application will separate long-running operations from the user interface by running them, if you think of threads, on a separate thread, or concurrently with the user interface operations. Servers responding to many clients are also examples of this. And these other uses for concurrency, in many cases, they're kind of event-driven, like, for example, by user input. And they also often don't have this kind of nice regular structure that at least some parallel algorithms do. So I would contend most realistic, large, non-trivial applications tend to combine many types of concurrency. That is, both the stuff that we would call parallelism and the other forms of concurrency. So examples of this would be kind of any non-trivial client application, web browsers, content creation, games, et cetera. And also, you can get these kind of apps on the server side. For example, my last picture up there is a photo editor that's actually running in the web browser. So probably a lot of the actual computation there is happening on a server. So just to illustrate one more time, so concurrency is kind of this notion. These boxes here are tasks, which is going to be my main unit of computation throughout this talk. And so you've got arrows kind of denoting launching tasks and maybe waiting for them to end. So this is kind of doesn't have much of a clear structure to it. This might be, for example, A could be something like a user interface, which is then launching off other tasks as the user clicks buttons or whatever. So then parallelism, which I would think of as a subset of concurrency. For example, here we have this task E and then F and G. So you kind of have, you wind up with three things running in parallel there, which you could be doing for performance. So we'd like to come up with a model that kind of addresses all these forms of concurrency. And so the existing models that people tend to use, which are things like threads or even task-based models, have many opportunities for concurrency errors. And these are things like data races, atomicity violations, deadlocks. I'm sure we're all familiar with these. One big issue is unintentional non-determinism, where your program executes differently on different executions and maybe only occasionally exhibits some kind of problem. So there are lots of opportunities for concurrency errors that tend to make concurrent programming more difficult than sequential programming. And the mainstream programming models really don't do much to help programmers with this stuff. You have like threads and low-level synchronization constructs, and really you can still get all these things very easily, and it doesn't do anything to help. So we argue that programming models should do something to help. And specifically, they should give guarantees of strong correctness properties. And these are things like database freedom, strong isolation of tasks, deadlock freedom, and for many programs, where you can get it, or for computations within programs, you may want proven deterministic semantics with sequential equivalence. So we'd like to have all these properties, and we'd like to do that while preserving the flexibility to support the many different ways that concurrency can be used. So we don't want a limited model that's just applicable to a relatively small class of programs. We want something very general. So there have been some existing proposals in the research to try to address this. I think many of them, though, if they provide strong guarantees, are often too limiting in some way for a lot of these real complex programs of the type I was just talking about. So these kind of these limitations fall into several categories. One of them is things like restricted parallelism structures. So there have been a lot of models that propose something like a fork join parallelism. One of these I'll just mention is deterministic parallel Java, or DPJ, which is something I've worked on in the past. So something like that can provide very nice properties within the programs it can express, but it's limited in the sense of the parallelism structure. Another class of limitations is requirements of full determinism. So there have been a number of deterministic programming models, which again is very nice when your whole computation is deterministic. But this kind of, for one thing, it gets back into this limitation in many cases of limited parallelism structures that are needed in order to be able to reason about the determinism of the system. There's also a class of something like models to determinize execution of some arbitrarily threaded program or something. So in that case, they may not have these same restricted structures, but they still can't allow you to kind of take advantage of the full performance that you might get by enabling non-determinism. And another class of problems is high overheads, especially systems that either kind of need to monitor and record things at the level of individual data accesses, and or that are using some kind of speculation that may have rollback, and you may wind up with a bunch of wasted computation. So these are some of the limitations of existing models that we would like to address. And to do this, we propose a new model called tasks with effects. And so it will give you flexible task-based control flow, which can express all these different kinds of concurrency, structured and unstructured. And it will still give you these strong safety properties, like task isolation, database freedom, deadlock avoidance, and deterministic semantics where the programmer desires and calls for them. So tasks with effects. First, the basic unit of work in this model is going to be a task. And this is not anything novel. It just looks a lot like other task models. But we have this operation execute later to create a task and wait for completion with an operation called get value. So we'll also allow a task to return a value. And so then the more novel thing is the use of effects. So basically, every task will have an effect specification. And that's going to be statically checked by the compiler to ensure that basically the effect specification that the programmer gives for the task actually covers all the essentially memory operations in that task. And then we'll combine that with a model of effect-based runtime task scheduling. So basically the key property here is that the scheduler will ensure that only tasks with non-interfering effects may execute concurrently. And so now in each, we have these two tasks here, and we have the effects writes A and reads B, which I'll explain a little bit more. But that's kind of the core addition of our model. And you'll note here, these two things, the static effect checking and effect-based scheduling, pretty much immediately combine to give you database freedom. Because if two tasks are accessing the same piece of data, and at least one of them is a write, then the effects will be conflicting, which will statically check that the effect specifications are correct. So we'll ensure we actually have those effect specifications. And the runtime task scheduling, if they're conflicting, will ensure that they don't run concurrently. So now I'll get into some more details about effects. So basically, every task and method in our system will have an effect summary. And I think there are actually multiple different ways you could potentially write effects. But for our prototype implementation, what we've done is we've based it on a deterministic parallel Java, DPJ, which is work from our group earlier. And so the basic notion in here is that the specification of effects will be in terms of regions. And the programmer specifies regions that essentially form a partitioning of the heap. And so then you can specify effects as reads or writes on those regions. And DPJ has lots of nice, more complex things too, which you can read about in the Uppsala 2009 paper. And I should also point out, these effects can be inferred. Now, we've done work on this that essentially you can infer most of the effect specifications of methods and avoid having to actually write them manually. So again, like in DPJ, the compiler will statically check effect summaries. So it will ensure that for every task and every method, the summary has to cover every memory access operation of that task and of every method that it calls. So this means that there's no need for runtime checks at the level of individual memory accesses. And finally, the new addition of iSystem compared to something like DPJ is that you're going to record the effects of tasks so they're available to the runtime system, and then they can be used by our scheduler. So now to get into the actual effect-based task scheduling, which is the main new component of iSystem. So once again, the key property guaranteed by the scheduler will be that two tasks with interfering effects will not be run concurrently. And you could adopt kind of many different scheduling strategies, but the fundamental thing you'll have to do is to delay execution of some tasks as necessary to ensure that this property holds if you try to execute them while some task with the interfering effects is already running. So there's lots of other things you could do with the scheduler that are kind of more or less orthogonal to this task's business or to the effects. And these are things like fairness properties, ordering, things like that. So we think that designing an efficient task-based scheduler and one that gives you all the properties you might want will be an important area for future work. We have an initial fairly simple implementation, but we think there's a lot of work yet to be done in this area. So now to just kind of illustrate how our system works, I'll give you an example of an image processing program. So we'll have a representation of an image here. And for simplicity, we're just going to divide it into two regions, the top and the bottom. And in a realistic program, you can have a more fine-grained decomposition, like by every line or every pixel of the image or whatever. But for simplicity, we'll just do the top and bottom. And so now you have some computation on that. And so we'll imagine here just having a GUI task that kind of responds to user input and then launches other tasks in response to that to actually do the requested computations. So in this case, again, for simplicity, we just have this one kind of operation, increased contrast, which can be done on several different images depending on what the user requests. And another thing is that, as I mentioned, we'd like to operate on the top and bottom in parallel. So to do that, we'll actually break down the increased contrast operation into these two increased pixel contrast operations, which will actually be responsible for updating the top and bottom arrays. And we want to be able to run them in parallel, as is shown there. So now, how does this work with effect-based task scheduling? So once again, we have our GUI here, and we launch one increased contrast operation on image one, which will write these regions, the top and bottom of image one. So now, in the first case, we'll have the user now specify to run an increased contrast operation on a different image, image two. So in this case, its effects are on the top and bottom of image two. So those are going to be disjoint regions from the ones for image one. And therefore, that task, if you have available processors or whatever, it can go ahead and run concurrently with the first increased contrast task because they're non-interfering effects, so they can run concurrently. But now, the other case, again, we have the GUI and the image one operation. And now the user will call for another operation on image one, so the same image. And thus, the top and bottom regions are the same. So the scheduler, in this case, needs to delay the execution of the second task until the first one has finished to ensure that there are never two concurrent tasks that are operating on the same regions and would have conflicting effects. So that's kind of the core mechanism of our tasks with effects system. And it provides you some, we think, nice properties. So one of them is this flexible task-based control flow, which can support a variety of structured and unstructured forms of concurrency. It's not limited to something like fork join. It's very general. Another property is the task isolation property, which again is pretty much directly from what our scheduler is doing. The task does not run concurrently with any other task that has interfering effects. And finally, like I mentioned, this scheduler behavior combined with static checking that the effect specifications are correct pretty much immediately gives you database freedom. So those are some very nice properties, but we'd still like to have some more properties in our system. And these are things like determinism of some programs or some computations within a larger program that can be statically checked. Also things like deadlock avoidance, and something like an atomic operation. And we'd also like to be able to reduce overhead by eliminating some of the dynamic effect checks in cases where we can analyze things statically instead. So the solution we've come up with to kind of address some of these problems is what we call effect transfer. And basically, this is just the idea that we can transfer effects from one task to another while the tasks are executing, or in the middle of one task, but at the beginning of another. So the first effect transfer mechanism is effect transfer to avoid deadlock. So in this case, we've got a task A that's going to wait for the task B, and its effects interfere with A's effects. So in this case, we've got task A and task B, which both have the effect writes X in addition to some other effects. And in this case, we have A executing B, but you could get kind of the same thing even if B was not executed from task A. But then the key thing is that task A will wait for task B by using the getValue operation, and then in the naive design, you would get a deadlock. So we'd like to avoid that, and the way we do it is to transfer task A's effects to task B at the point of the getValue operation. So here we have again A and B. We'll do the getValue, but in this case, the effect transfer will allow B to run. And basically, the way this is going to work is that when you do that getValue operation, until the getValue operation, B can't run because its effects still interfere with A's. But when you do the getValue, the effects from A will be transferred to B. That allows B to run. A, meanwhile, is blocked waiting for B to finish. So you don't have two tasks actually executing concurrently with conflicting effects. And then before the task A continues, those effects will be transferred back to A so it can continue execution and access all the same data it originally did. And so this is our core effect transfer mechanism to avoid deadlock. And I should mention it also works correctly through chains of waiting and blocking tasks, not just one directly like that. So now we have one other major type of effect transfer. And that's effect transfer for structured parallelism, which is something like fork join or things like that. And the key idea here is that some of the effects from a parent task can be transferred to a child task at the time that the parent task launches the child task. And so we have an operation to do this, which we'll call spawn. And so this will allow the child task to start executing immediately, because normally you would have to do your runtime scheduling to ensure that no other tasks have conflicting effects. But in this case, you know statically that the parent task was already running with those effects, and it just transferred them to the child. And so you can safely run the child immediately without the need for this dynamic effect checking. And then the parent task, once you've run this spawn, can continue executing with its remaining effects. So you subtract out the effects from the parent task that are in the effects of the child task, and then you allow the parent task to continue executing with the remaining effects. And we can statically analyze that this effect subtraction will happen at the point of the spawn. So essentially, we can statically analyze what the covering effects will be at each point in the parent task. So our static effect analysis is still sound in this case. And again, the analog for joining a completed child task is the join operation, which will transfer the effects back to the parent task. So this is a natural way of expressing structured parallelism, like, for example, fork join operations, where you may have a parent task that launches child tasks that are, in some sense, subtasks of the parent task, and operate on some portion of the region of data that's originally accessed by the parent task. So now an example of this, we have our GUI once again, and an increased contrast operation, and maybe some other operations executing concurrently. But in the increased contrast, as I mentioned earlier, we'd like to operate in parallel on the top and the bottom. So we're going to use spawn to create a task to do the increased pixel contrast operation to actually update the top array. And so that transfers over the effect writes top to our new task. And then the effect writes bottom will remain with the parent task. So then within that same task, we can do another increased pixel contrast operation on the bottom, since that's still covered by the writes bottom effect. And then before the increased contrast operation completes, we want to ensure that the both halves have been computed. So we do a join operation. And then that transfers the effect writes top back to the parent task. So it once again has the effects writes top and bottom. So those are our effect transfer mechanisms. And so with that, I'll go over once again kind of all the safety properties of our system. So we have database freedom, as I've mentioned, from the combination of static and dynamic checks. We have a deadlock avoidance because of our effect transfer mechanism, which will ensure that we don't get a deadlock due to effect conflicts between two tasks. It's still actually possible to write a deadlock in our system of a cycle of tasks waiting for each other. But this kind of eliminates a major class of deadlocks that we would otherwise get. And we think that with this mechanism in place, we haven't had a major problem with deadlock in the things we've tried to write with it. And we also have an atomicity property, which is specifically that portions of tasks that don't contain any waiting operation for another task within them behave atomically. And the reason it's restricted like that about waiting operations is because of the effect transfer mechanism, which can allow some other task to potentially update some of the same regions when you wait for a task. But other than that, it's atomic. And finally, we have optional determinism. So computations using only spawn and join are deterministic. And this can be statically checked. The programmer can annotate a piece of code to indicate that it should be deterministic, and will ensure that it only uses spawn and join, so therefore it actually is deterministic. Or if it's not, you'll get a compile time error. So now I'll present some research questions. We have a preliminary implementation of this, but we think how a production quality implementation would look, there are still several questions in our minds. So one is, how should we compare effects in a runtime scheduler? And basically, how can we do this efficiently? And so in the region-based effect system we're using from DPJ, there's a natural hierarchy of regions. So we think you can kind of structure the effect checking based on that tree structure. And that can kind of be the basis of an efficient runtime scheduler, we think. Another question is, how should we represent effects in the code? So again, we're using the DPJ notion of regions and read and write effects on regions. But you could also use something like objects or program variables, some different representation of effects. And we'd also like to reduce the manual annotation burden of having to actually write these effects on methods and tasks and write the related region elements in types, which are needed for a DPJ type region system. So like I mentioned earlier, we've actually done work in the past on inferring many of these effect annotations, but we'd like to work even further on that. And so now another question. Finally, so far we focused on essentially a shared memory type of system, but we think this can also be extended to heterogeneous models or non-shared memory systems. We think something like a notion of regions and explicitly specified effects based on regions could potentially be used to kind of control some of the data transfer in a system like that. So we think that would be a possible direction for future work. So now in summary, complex applications use concurrency in many different ways, including parallelism and other forms of concurrency, which often don't have kind of a clear structure to them and aren't addressed by some of the existing safe parallel programming models. So we need a safe concurrent programming model that can support all of these kinds of applications. And so for that, we propose our new model of tasks with effects. And it provides flexible task-based control flow, isolation between tasks, database freedom, deadlock avoidance, and deterministic semantics where the programmer desires them. So that's it. Thank you.